Welcome to the Crypto 101 podcast, presented by Gemini, your bridge to the future of money.
All right, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the Crypto 101 podcast. And today is a very special episode, and it's sponsored by Concordium. And we're super excited to chat with them and learn more about what they're doing. And we have their CEO, Boris, aka Triple B, on with us today. Boris, welcome, and it's good to have you.
Yeah, good to be here. Thank you very much for having us, for having me. Even though you didn't pronounce my full name, I'm maybe going to press you on this because it's absolutely hilarious. But Triple B is fine.
You know, it's fun. We were joking back and forth before this started, and we were going through your full name, and we came with this idea of Triple B, and I was like, man, that actually sounds really, really cool. Let's run with that. But Boris, nonetheless, excited to have you here. You're doing a lot of great things. We love bringing in leaders like yourself to talk about the crypto space, because that's why the listeners come on. They want to hear what the people that are actually building in the background, the people who are making the next generation of the crypto market. And they want to hear what they're doing and also just kind of get their expert insight as to what in the world is going on. Because this year, especially as we're doing this, we're wrapping up 2025. I mean, this has been a hurricane of a year with all sorts of stuff going on. I mean, positive regulation, positive catalysts. We've had all these big developments. And then you throw in a couple of black swan events to kind of stir up the pot a little bit. And it's been this back and forth kind of side to side. But when you look at actual progress, it's been a really, really good one. So there's going to be a lot to talk about. I mean, again, stoked to be able to talk and speak with you about it. But let's just, you know, get to know you at a high level before we even get into Concordium, because I mean, you have nearly 20 years of experience when it comes to not just digital assets, but like the finance and the infrastructure space as a whole. With all of that, what kind of piqued your interest towards the crypto and the blockchain markets in the first place?
Yeah, look, a lot to unpack here. So it really started for me, like if you really want to boil it down, if we want to keep it to digital assets. I mean, I've been in finance my entire life. Mm-hmm. I've done all sorts, from hedge funds to brokerage to you know, back end stuff in and around M&A. To asset management, and then subsequently started something in crypto in 2018, which became rather sizable, which we can talk about. What really kind of sparked my interest, if you want to call it like this, was the very first line of the Satoshi white paper. I was basically a late comer, if you want to call it like this. It was 2017 for me. It was the very first line, global electronic peer-to-peer cash. Mm. And I thought, you know, having been in finance, that's quite specific. But the matter of the fact is that the entire world is basically running in and around, you know, how do you exchange cash for what, and goods and services, and what is cash? What is money? I kind of knew, at least from the financial service industry. But then, of course, you kind of start thinking of like, what is happening when I go to Starbucks and I buy my coffee? What's happening behind the scenes? And it turns out it's an absolute, I'm not sure if I'm allowed to swear, but it's a clusterfuck.
Yeah.
And in many ways, I kind of thought there is something to be done. I was always very infrastructure driven. And then in 2018, you know, I'm the founding partner and was the chief commercial officer of Copper. I don't know if you know that shop, but was one of the largest custodians and prime infrastructure providers globally. And we solved for a lot of problems in and around, you know, off exchange settlements. We were the first ones to do the walled garden. We were the first ones to do Clearloop, the way that we implemented custody, and then, you know, kind of became one of the biggest custodians. And then Clearloop specifically was a flagship product, if you want to call it like this, with like hundreds of billions of trading volume that went through there per month. Very institutional driven. During that time, of course, there were a lot of foundations, you know, from all the biggest ones that you know, that used custody with us at the time. And one of them was Concordium. And Concordium is a very, and we're going to go much deeper on this, I think, later. But was a very unique blockchain. You know, at the time we had like 250 blockchain engineers and they all revered the code. They were like, this is very, very nicely written. As it turns out, you know, Concordium was built by some of the best cryptographers in the world, like Ivan Damgaard, Torben Pritz-Pedersen, like those guys. And it was founded by a guy who really knows his craft, which is Lars Seier Christensen. He's the co-founder, and for 20 years he was the CEO of Saxo Bank. Mm. It always sparked my interest. And then copper became quite big, you know, kind of to understand this, why I left, right? Because like copper became quite big. I like to more build things. I like it more raw. I don't like to operate stuff. We hired like, you know, hundreds of people and a load of bankers, and they really enjoy that type of stuff. And I was like, okay, it's time to maybe move on. And then in September, I took over here. But yeah, to your other point, like what's going on right now? A lot. A lot is going on, and a lot of it doesn't make a lot of sense. But if you kind of unpack it and scratch away the surface of just like going onto crypto Twitter, etc., you basically, it's for me at least, it's relatively obvious what's happening right now. But we will be able to unpack this, I guess.
Cold mornings, holiday plans. This is when I need my wardrobe to just work. That's why I'm all about Quince. They make it easy to look sharp, feel good, and find gifts that last. From Mongolian cashmere sweaters to Italian wool coats, Quince pieces are crafted from premium materials and built to hold up without the luxury markup. Quince makes the essentials every guy needs: Mongolian cashmere sweaters for $50, Italian wool coats that look and feel designer, and denim and chinos that fit just right. Their outerwear lineup is no joke, guys. You have to go check it out. Each piece is made from premium materials by trusted factories that meet rigorous standards for craftsmanship and ethical production. By cutting out the middleman and traditional markup, Quince delivers the same quality as luxury brands at a fraction of the price. It's everything you actually want to wear, built to hold up season after season. Guys, the down jacket I picked up from Quince is getting me through the cold winter when I go up north to visit my family. I also got an awesome vest that I like to wear down here in Florida when the weather gets colder as well. It looks super expensive and designer, but again, it's a fraction of the price. Guys, get your wardrobe sorted and your gift list handled this holiday season with Quince. Don't wait. Go to quince.com/crypto101 for free shipping on your orders and 365-day returns. Now available in Canada too. That's Quince, quince.com/crypto101. You'll get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/crypto101. You'll be glad you did. Did you know your calendar age doesn't always match how old your body actually is? I found that out firsthand when I took the True Age test from True Diagnostic, and it completely changed the way I think about my health. With just a simple at-home test, you can find out your true biological age with no doctor visits or labs. Just a quick, painless finger prick. You mail in your sample using a prepaid package, and in 2 to 3 weeks, you will get a detailed online report about your aging and health. The test breaks down how fast 11 key systems like your heart, brain, liver, and lungs are aging, plus 75 longevity biomarkers covering things like metabolic health, immune response, and disease risk. Your biological age, how old your cells and organs really are, is actually the number one predictor of your risk for serious diseases like heart disease, cancer, and dementia. That's why knowing it can be life-changing, and that's exactly what True Age helps you do. They made it so easy to get my blood drawn, show me my results, and give me the data so I could make the perfect action plan for me to better my health. If you're serious about longevity or just curious about what your body's real age is, head to truediagnostic.com and use my code crypto101 for 20% off your entire order or subscription. That's truediagnostic.com, code crypto101 for 20% off. Your future self will thank you.
This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more, man. It has been, like you said, just a wild year. There's so much going on. There's so much still going on. And the beauty of crypto is, guess what? It's not going to stop. There's going to be all sorts of new catalysts as we move our way into 2026, as we move our way through the end of this decade even. Some are going to be good. In fact, I'd say most are going to be good. But there's going to be some bad ones in there. And I think that's just part of growth. right? And so when we talk today, we're going to go a lot deeper and we're about to get into it. But when you talk about layer ones and infrastructure as a whole, you got to go through a few speed bumps to really figure things out. And one of the cool things about having kind of your unique perspective on this with, 20 years of finance and infrastructure experience is that you've kind of got to see it all since 2008, right? You go through that entire crisis, you go through everything that we saw there, the fall, the recovery, the historic rise that happened afterwards. Then you went through what we saw in like 2021, 2022, what we went through, COVID and all the crazy dips and valleys and runs that we've had since then. And then we're at the current day. So it's like this kind of stuff, it doesn't faze you, it doesn't faze me. And just for the listeners out there, again, I think that this is all very normal and natural for any space that is new.
I agree. I mean, look, I remember in 2018, everybody was like, okay, this is it. Party's over. Let's go back to our day jobs. The Bitcoin's funeral, if you want to call it like that.
Yeah.
Of course, it wasn't. Infrastructurally, a lot of things have happened. 2021 was different. It was like the DeFi summer.
Yeah.
You kind of were able to grow a user base, which was quite interesting to see. Some loads of funky stuff that was going on and still is going on, quite frankly. And then 2022 was a different one because I think at that point, people were kind of leveraging themselves a little bit too much. And I mean, more from the infrastructure side, you suddenly had, of course, FTX, you had Celsius, you had like all those things that were kind of systemic at the time. That, of course, kind of had a cascading effect. And, wherever we are in the cycle right now, I have my views. They're quite strong and convinced. I'm convincing myself of these. But there are a couple of things that are just like weird for me, right? In and around, what happened on October 10th. Mm-hmm. Interestingly, there is no body that surfaced yet. Mm-hmm. I would have thought that at least a couple of guys would have blown up in and around that event, but didn't really happen. The next thing is, stupid things that kind of occurred. Specifically October 10th, I think is quite interesting because for some reason we have decided that stablecoins should trade at par to each other, which is absolutely stupid for a long period of time. Granted, they actually wanted to fix it, but it was exploited beforehand. That credit trades at par to each other is just nuts, right?
Yeah.
So, I'm more interested in the adoption.
Yeah.
Right. And quite frankly, as an industry, we have done extremely poorly. It's very poor, our performance. And in the entire blockchain, and if you want to go crypto specific, the idea of it being adopted, and you see the grassroots now, but it's the same stuff that we heard in 2021, quite frankly. What do you actually do in order to get users on? Because the matter of the fact is, the amount of DApp users, the average monthly DApp users, are roughly the same for the last 3.5 to 4 years. That didn't grow. And that has a reason.
What do you think the market's missing right now?
Right now, to do what? For Bitcoin to do a new all-time high? Or
I would say for the growth, we were just talking about how crypto has done maybe not the best job of getting that kind of next level adoption and working towards it. What's missing to get us to that point? Because I think a lot of people feel the same way, especially when they look at maybe like activity, or if they look at like, I don't want to get into prices, but you kind of look at the general altcoin market. You said, hey, well, Bitcoin's done well, but there's been kind of a disconnect between maybe the adoption of Bitcoin and the adoption as, a general technology.
Yeah, Bitcoin, we need to kind of leave Bitcoin aside, right? Mm-hmm. Because like Bitcoin, there was an idea and then it went down a completely different route with regards to store of value. Mm-hmm. And it has a rightful place there because thousands of years ago, you were able to buy a chicken with like a shell with a hole in it. As long as you and me agree that it has value, right?
Yeah.
Which is where the whole idea of money comes from. And smart money specifically, which what we are very interested in. I think the biggest part, quite frankly, is tooling. Tooling is one of the core things. We have been hailing off the rooftops for so long now about real world adoption. But there is nothing that has been really built for real world adoption. But there are certain things that need to be addressed in order to get new users into an ecosystem. That does not work if you try to explain to them what a mnemonic seed phrase is. That does not work if you try to explain to them that if you lose that alphanumerical string, all your money is gone, right? It does not work if you go down the route of trying to explain people the complexities. To my initial point, they have no Scooby of how of what MT500 messages are and why it takes 2 days in order to settle a transaction when you buy Apple shares, nor what it takes in terms of the payment flow when you buy coffee at the corner shop, right? If you are continuously just going down that route and don't address the systemic problems, which in my opinion is very much smart contract driven, like that's one of the core ones for me, from issuance to actually usage and ultimately smart contracts fulfilling a custodial function, and you're not able to abstract away the complexities of what this technology can do. And what I always say is, I mean, if a couple of people from my community, et cetera, are dialing in, they're going to be bored of hearing this. But blockchain is here to be used, not understood. Mm-hmm. Everybody tries to understand it.
Yeah.
Don't understand it. Just use it, mm-hmm. right? But that is down to the industry in order to build things for that to happen. And if you rock up and try to get users into an ecosystem and try to explain to them what money Lego is or what yield farming in a DeFi pool is, forget it. It's a non-starter. It's for very young people, and that's cool. But if you want adoption sooner, there is a group of people, if I think of my auntie or my parents, it took them a month in order for them to feel comfortable to click two buttons at the side of the phone and just put it there to hear beep, right? For Apple Pay. Like it took a month.
Yeah.
So why would you think that in any shape or form, mm-hmm. suddenly, if you try to kind of give them, like I say, open a wallet, write down those 24 words and don't lose them because that's your backup. It's like people go like, no, I'm not doing that. Yeah. So that's, I think, one of the main reasons of why we haven't seen it take off properly, which is also one of the reasons why the big chains out there have a big problem in my opinion, in order to kind of steer towards it. But that kind of goes back to more smart contract problems, which we can maybe dive into later.
Yeah, I mean, let's dive into Concordium now. You know, give everyone a proper introduction. We've talked about some of the issues that crypto is seeing. You know, what is Concordium doing if someone hasn't heard about it, and how is it addressing some of those issues?
Yeah, a lot of people haven't heard about it yet, unfortunately, but they very soon will. Look, if you think of Concordium, there are two core pillars. Mm-hmm. On the one side, identity. So the reason for that is I've spent a lot of time in the rooms with regulators. Mm-hmm. The regulator's job is there in order to safeguard retail. Preliminary, like that's their main job, and they do a okay job because in many ways they're over-regulating. What's happening in the US right now is pretty cool, to be honest. But what it ultimately comes down to is, you know, do you remember in 2021 when everybody was talking about permission DeFi and stuff like this? What the stance that we are taking is, or the uniqueness of Concordium is that you have the ability to identify yourself once you enter the ecosystem, but you do it once.
Yeah.
And from that point onwards, you are interacting in the ecosystem in a complete privacy-preserving way using zero-knowledge proofs. Like this stuff was built in like 2016-17. The TGE was in 2021. And it was a little bit too early for it, quite frankly, which was why if anybody is going now and looks at the thing, it looks not great. But we had a pretty good year in comparison to the rest of the crypto markets, like significantly up. But what it ultimately comes down to is the fact that if I'm interacting right now in this digital world, right, what you have to go through right now, and I'm sure every listener will agree to this, whatever service or whatever goods you would like to access, you basically have to go through an onboarding process. So if I need to prove that I'm over 18 or over 21, it's not just enough that I can give them security that I'm over 18 or over 21, right? I basically have to send them a copy of my passport or my driver's license so they know exactly what my birth date is, they know exactly where I live, they know exactly what height I am, whatever it is, right? I don't want that. I don't want this. So this is the cypherpunk in me, right? I don't want that. But the matter of the fact is that the regulator is there in order to enforce those things for sometimes good reason, in some cases complete and utter over-regulation. So that's pillar number one. So zero knowledge proof based identity verification. Zero knowledge proof based verification in an interaction, which might be just access or it might be payment, right?
Yeah.
The second part where the uniqueness comes in is what we have done is we built something called PLTs last year, protocol level tokens. Let me kind of take a larger swig at this.
Yeah.
What it ultimately comes down to is that every single hack, every single, you know, misappropriation of funds that you kind of, you know, just look at what happened to Balancer like 3-4 weeks ago, yeah, or whatever. And before that, it was like, what was the big one? Our good friends at Bybit, yeah, right? It's smart contract vulnerabilities for different reasons with regards to the ability to just swap addresses or whatever else it is. But the big problem is that due to the speed of innovation in this industry in and around Ethereum and Solana and whatever else, those smart contracts have been pushed down the road of fulfilling a custodial function. Because when it comes to an exchange of money, there are two ways, right? Either you trust me every single month in order to click a button and send you $100, or we'll put it in a smart contract. And 1 second after midnight on the first of every single month, it gets released, right? And that is true for like DeFi trading and everything else. Money literally sits in smart contracts. Now that is, and I know a thing or two about custody, having been part of building one of the biggest custodians in the world. So what I mean there is that when it comes to the whole promise of why this industry has existed in the first place, you know, programmable money. How often have we heard that, right? Concordium allows you to do this on the protocol level, right? So what happens now is that you can program into it whatever you want, right? Into the issuance. So issuance is not happening in a smart contract. It's happening on the protocol level. On the other side, then, if you bind this together with the identity, you can, for example, solve for things out of the gate. Travel rule, done. Age verifying payments, done. Geofencing, done. Right?
Yeah.
And that ultimately allows you in order to, so we have over the course of the year, even though nobody knows us, right, for now, we've got 10 stablecoin issuers on, right? Like Stabler, etc., which are quite, you know, Tether's love child in and around the compliance side of things. Yeah. And I think we can then dive deeper with regards to use cases. But if you think of Concordium, it's zero knowledge proof based privacy preserving identity and protocol level issuance, fulfilling on the core promise of programmable money and all the perks that come with it, and security, you know, cutting the risks down to a bare minimum.
Yeah. And that's been a huge push, it feels like, since 2022, is how can we cut risks? How can we make this more reliable? And then also, when there's a lot of infrastructure that is being built, I think it makes sense that, you know, there's some things that just shouldn't be publicly available, right? There's people out there who advocate that everything should be on-chain and transparent and this and that. But I think when you look at it from a business perspective or a banking perspective or a transaction perspective, like, I don't want anyone seeing what my bank records look like. I don't want people seeing everything that I buy with my credit card or my debit card or every wire transfer that I make or every, like, I don't know if I'm on a brokerage or all, you know, there's a million different kinds of transactions that you can make, whether you're an individual or a business or a government or whatever. And it makes sense. I think there's a time and a place for full transparency, and there's a time and a place where it's like, hey, not everything should be just an open book for anyone and everyone. And that's where kind of I would say that this fits in there, is that it helps clarify that line. But it also is saying, hey, we want to be intentional about onboarding business on the blockchain, because for the past several years, it has been onboarding. And I would say doing a good job of onboarding retail traders, retail users and investors to some degree. And I think now the next stage is saying, okay, now that there's at least some sort of a retail base, how can we actually build up the business side? And that seems to be where Concordium really comes in.
To a certain extent, we're actually flipping this on its head.
Okay, let's flip it on its head.
Yeah, because look, there is a... I mean, it depends of how wide I want to go now, because otherwise I'm going to blabble on for like the next 10 minutes. But there are other maxis for specific ecosystems, yeah, right? You've got the ETH maxis, you've got the SOL maxis, like, and they don't necessarily like swapping between each other, which is one of the reasons of why you see what has happened to the altcoin market specifically over the course of the last couple of years. Money is not really moving from one to the other. Nobody, because basically you need to call a spade a spade. They all do the same shit. just in a different color.
Yeah.
Right? The users are the core thing here. If you come again to with a proposition of like, hey, trade here because Solana's cool and fast and, you know, neon and meme coins. You like meme coins? Come to Solana.
Yeah.
Right? That's easy. Go pump funding and whatever you want to do, right? Yeah. Go for your life. The problem here is that those users truly are also the users in Web 2. Don't get me wrong. But the Web 2 users, which this pie here is much bigger, much bigger.
Yeah.
You need to figure out of how to tap into this one, not the 21-year-old that has, you know, the 18-year-old that is now got his bar mitzvah money or whatever and is now starting to do some cool stuff in the ecosystem of Solana or Ethereum. That's not the way that we think about it. The way that we think about it is, how do you get people into an ecosystem without mentioning crypto, without mentioning blockchain? And this is where you kind of have user adoption on the premise of, and I give you an example, for example, right? If you go in the latest announcements that we've had, one of them is like with Source Boiled. It's in the adult industry.
Yeah.
Adult content is huge. People don't like to talk about it, but it's a massive one, right? Every human, they don't want to admit it, but they use it. But ultimately what it comes down to is that the regulator has now rocked up, and this is the important point here, right? If you want to have adoption and you don't want, you would like to get the, you know, the crypto crowd involved, you cannot do it if you don't, you know, implement privacy in some shape or form. But there's a difference between privacy and anonymity, because on the other side of the coin is the regulator, and you need to kind of strike that balance. And if you want to see adoption, the adoption doesn't happen if I continuously have to onboard just like the way that I'm onboarding right now.
Yeah.
You see what I mean? Because that's a massive cost center. It's a huge cost center. The reason why Wall Street is as big as it is not because there are like cool people that are just doing trading and like, you know, spray champagne and stuff in Patagonia vests. It ultimately comes down to is that the vast majority is very, very sad individuals that go in, sit in a dark room and don't do anything else but back office and compliance work. That's the reason why, that's why you have those centers, right? So that's what you need to change. And that's where we kind of come in. Not on the premise of like revolutionizing Wall Street right now. We take it from a different level. We take it from a level of like getting a user base into an ecosystem and allowing them to interact in a privacy preserving way without them knowing that they're in a Web3 ecosystem now. Which means, if you think of adult, if you think of gaming, if you think of gambling, for example, right? Online casinos, huge, right? Yeah. The regulator has decided, or look at what's happening on social media right now. Look at what happens in Australia right now. They basically switched it off for under 16s, like by law. So, and to a certain extent, right? Because there is content that you shouldn't be watching if you are of a certain age. Now, if you would like to do it though, I would like to access adult content or gambling or whatever, but I do not necessarily want them to know where I live. I do not want them to know what my name is. I do not want them to know what my exact birth date is. They need to know that I'm over 18. The regulator goes like, okay, pushing a button and saying, yes, I'm over 18 is not enough anymore. Okay, what's the solution? So we brought this to the regulators here, to Ofcom. They went like, please go ahead. It's one of the best things that we've seen. And that's the reason why you see slowly adoptions. There is a lot of merchants. And on the other side, you just go to the app store, download the Concordium ID app, go through the motion of verification. There is no crypto mentioned. There is no seed phrases. There is no nothing, right? At this point, you just create an identity that is yours and should only be yours and allows you to interact in an ecosystem in a fully privacy preserving way using zero knowledge proofs.
So when it comes to, like, I guess, proving your identity in the first place, that something, I guess, explain that process. Is that where someone is going through a third party source, verifying it there, then they give you the green light and say, hey, this person's good, and then you turn it on the back end? Is that how that works?
So yeah, let me explain. It's a very, very good question. So what happens is that you have like the nota benes, sumsubs on feeders, like whatever is there, right? Those are identity providers. They verify that your document is correct, that it's yours. It's verified. But the magic is what happens afterwards, right? You have your device, right? And on your device, what happens once you go through that process in the Concordium ecosystem, they cryptographically hash what we call an identity object to your wallet. only to yours. There is no copy of your passport floating around on the blockchain, nothing, right? And then I start interacting. So what the blockchain basically does, it takes a specific line item depending on what the request is and says, like, is this person over 18? Mm-hmm. Transaction goes through, like, zero knowledge proof says yes or no. Is this person, you know, is this a UK government issued document? Yes or no? But not what it is. So nobody has a, you know, like I say, you don't run around and have hundreds of copies of your identity on different merchants, different ledgers sitting. You basically do it once, and you should only do it once. And from that point onwards, it's yours and only yours.
And I mean, immediately my brain's going towards this can be used for so many different avenues. I mean, we're talking about identity and the stuff that's associated with that, but you can continue to take it a step further to, I mean, endless different areas. Does this person have the security clearance he needs? And it can be yes or no. But again, without letting people know all the credentials and all the stuff that they don't need to know and the stuff that you don't want to be out there in the case of like a data leak. You know, so I guess in the absolute worst case scenario, it's like, does this person have that? Yes, but not actually revealing all the information. Like saying, I guess a great example of that would be like, does this person have a verified age and email? Yes, but if it gets leaked, you're not losing your age and your address and your email address isn't all out there. It's just acknowledging the fact that those are verified, which is fascinating. So it's like, I mean, you, even in like an airport situation, it's like, you know, there's a million different lines, right? You have your normal, you have your TSA pre-check, you have clear, you have all these. You could just kind of scan it and can say, oh, this person is instantly approved for that. This person is approved for security clearance. This person is approved for like, just you fill in the blank. There's all these different areas. And it, I mean, it does seem like that's kind of the next logical step in the world. I mean, we're becoming increasingly more integrated with tech. We're, you know, making it part of our daily lives. And it just seems like it makes sense if we have something like this that is instantly verifiable without putting people's identity and data actually at risk.
You absolutely nailed it. Like that's really what it is. That's what our Jane is. So, there are no face scans or whatever. Like this is literally just you prove, that's the whole point of zero knowledge proof.
Yes.
Like the title says, like that was the original idea, you know, think of it, right? So it really, like, well, Concordium, if you think of Concordium, even though people don't know it yet, and we're doing our hardest in order to kind of, you know, fight the big one, but that also needs to be understood, right? If you kind of stand there and you go like, oh yeah, you know, a lot of people just think about token price, right? Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, what it comes down to, if I'm rocking up and I'm trying to, where we are right now, to pick a fight with Ethereum or Solana, I'm smoking crack. Why would I do that? What I ultimately need to do is bring users into an ecosystem. Mm-hmm. And from that point onwards, you can slowly guide them into this. Cross-sell them into it, right? Or you already have users in the Web3 world, which, for example, we have with our partnerships. If you just, you know, you just need to look it up with like Ledger or Bitcoin.com. Like those are tens of millions of users. And they really want to go down that route of actually having the wallet verify whatever they would like to access, right? They've chosen Concordium to do this with. So all this stuff is now about to go live in like January, February and beyond, right? But ultimately what it comes down to is, like you said, the privacy preservation, my identity not being bare ass out there in whatever interaction is exactly what I want. Mm-hmm. I want to interact with certain things. I do not want them to know everything about me.
Yeah.
That's, and I understand that there are regulatory constraints and I need to adhere to them. And if you think, and this is where I'm kind of stamping on the hopes and dreams of those hardcore cypherpunks that go like, screw the central banks and blah, blah, blah. This will not happen, peeps. Yeah. I think eventually we might get there in 100 years or whatever. But like, if you think that now Zcash is going to rule the world, and the regulator is just going to give in and go like, ah, you know what? KYC, AML, forget it. Let's YOLO a little bit. It's absolutely not happening.
Yeah.
Like that's the key thing. So
you're right. I mean, in a perfect world, that would be awesome. Unfortunately,
absolutely,
we don't live in a perfect world. There's people who are bad actors. There are people who are malicious. So listen, I mean, both you and myself, we're some of the biggest crypto advocates and fans out there. We want as much adoption. We want as much integration as possible. However, I think part of that is just understanding that those entities, they have a time and a place in today's society. And that's not going anywhere anytime soon. So I think that there is this healthy balance where there is an integration of blockchain technology, there's an integration of crypto, but there's also a time and place for a traditional financial infrastructure. Like there is a need for that, and especially its relations to governments, and I think even like everyday people. But again, just because that isn't going away doesn't mean that crypto can't grow and be integrated and become an increasingly bigger part of everyone's life.
Let me give you an example, and let me give your listeners an example. Uh-huh. Because like I've told you what the core USPs are, and I completely agree with everything what you said right now. But think of it this way. We have really cool innovations in this space. And what I mean with really cool innovations is if I just concentrate on the stablecoin market right now. I'm not going to talk about Paolo and Tether and even Jeremy having a hard time to try to compete with him because the use case is so geared towards the crypto native world, right? But there are things that are yield bearing, like tokenized money market funds, synthetic stablecoins, right? Now, those stablecoins don't even get close to the TVL that, for example, Tether has. Do people ask themselves why? I did for a long time. And ultimately what it comes down to is that you don't solve for a use case that is based on what I like to call and what a lot of people like to call the time value of money. Now, if I have the ability, and there are other things, right? Because like if I think of Biddle, if I think of Hashnode, if I think of Ondo, right? They are securities. Mm-hmm. So they have to adhere to the US regulatory framework in order to be handled like securities. So there's onboarding, accredited investors, over 100,000, blah, blah, blah,
yeah.
Right? There is no secondary market for those things. Mm-hmm. There is no Biddle BTC pair on Binance, right? It doesn't exist. Why? Because that would be a use case, but that use case doesn't compute with the regulatory framework, right? So you still have to go through those hoops.
Yeah.
Now, if you think of it that way, in terms of like what we have done, we actually have onboarded, well, partnered with. I mean, it's just another stablecoin in the ecosystem, Spico. Mm. You guys in America maybe don't know that one, but it's the biggest tokenized money market fund outside of the US. Mm. It's like number three or number four now globally. Wow. But ultimately, what it comes down to is that the idea of programmable money, right, on the core promise, like I said earlier, peer to peer, you and me decide what has value, and you and me decide what we're willing in order to exchange value for, mm-hmm. right? So think of, in this case, the ability to have the programmability on the base layer, like we have on the protocol level, with all the wonderful perks that we partially have built and are building out right now, like locking mechanisms, right? Multi-locks, whatever, single locks, and then smart contracts govern and smart contracts doing what, in my opinion, smart contracts should be doing and what smart contracts are absolutely amazing for, which is enforce conditionality. Mm. They shouldn't act in a custodial fashion, mm-hmm. my and our core belief. Now, think of rental agreements for a second, right? So if you and me agree that, so maybe first that, what happens once you sign on the dotted line on a rental agreement? What's the first thing you have to do?
I guess you got to show up. You got to get the paperwork together and you got to sign.
No, you ultimately have to put down a deposit.
Yeah.
Like that's a security deposit. That's what it is.
Yeah.
Like at least here, like here in Europe, you have to send to a specified bank account, which is an escrow facility, X amount, like 3-4 months of rent.
Yeah.
Right? Now, what happens there is that money goes into a drain because the only one that makes money on this is the bank, mm-hmm. right? So now it sits there for like 2-3 years. You did not smash up the kitchen in Ozzy Osbourne style. And subsequently, you are supposed to get like your 10,000 back or whatever, you know,
yeah.
whatever you have it in the savings account, you don't get the full, you know, the yield is not yeah. yours. Now, that also, that facility costs, the bank doesn't do all this stuff for free, mm-hmm. right? So if I rock up and I basically, on the time value of money idea, meaning, yep. I can agree with you peer-to-peer mm-hmm. to use something that is signed transaction that goes your direction yeah. based on whatever conditions are sitting in the smart contract of like kitchen is not, you know, smashed up and mm-hmm. you just go beep, beep at the end of the thing and the transaction basically is just canceled if you want to look at it that way, yeah. right? You find yourself in the position right now where you can give a yield-bearing stablecoin a reason to exist, because right now it's very, very, you know, minuscule. Yeah. And what I mean with that is, people don't know that a lot of, I mean, Guy actually written a nice piece about it. Like about 60% of Biddle's AUM is Guy from Athena, right? Was actually also the biggest client at Copper, or one of the biggest clients at Copper. So what it ultimately comes down to is there is, and if I'm a fund, like we had 400 institutional clients at Copper, right?
Yeah.
If I'm risk off because the market is choppy or whatever is happening, right? I'm risk off. I might as well call my bank and just buy the money market fund. Why would I buy the token? Mm-hmm. I can't do anything with it, right?
Yeah.
Because there is no market for it. There is nothing that I can do with it as such. I'm simplifying it down a lot. And you can take that logic down to its absolute bare bones. And what I mean there is that you can use securities in order to do things. For example, I don't know what you have in, you know, I don't know what you have in America. Think of, like, we have Deliveroo here. I think you've got DoorDash or something.
Yeah, we have DoorDash. Right?
If you go to a restaurant, you open the menu and tell the waiter, I would like to have this as a starter, that as a main. The very first thing that the guy doesn't do is whip out the machine and you have to pay there and then.
Yeah.
Right? You get it first. You see if it arrives. Did the chef spit on it? Are there hairs on it? I don't know. Is it the wrong thing? And once you're done, then you pay. Mm-hmm. Right? So that transaction has a time component to it. If you use something in this wonderful idea of like what we can tokenize, right? Suddenly tokenization would make sense.
Yeah.
You basically come to the conclusion that I can use something like this, but that requires you, in order to not issue in a smart contract, in my opinion, because that's one of the biggest risks, that requires you to X, Y, Z, right?
Yeah.
And in the meantime, it yields you. Now, for the time being, it's a tokenized money market fund, but why not take an HFT, you know, long, short equity fund, as long as you and me agree that we take that as a base? I might need to top up because it didn't work out. But if it does work out, I might make 15% on that annualized, right? Over the course of a certain time span. So this is where we want to go. Or this is not only where we want to go, this is exactly where we're going, right? I'm not trying to compete on TVL with Solana or ETH right now because of their Tether or USDC holdings. What's the point, right? What I do want to be there is to explain on an institutional level, and then combining that with the identity, meaning you can solve for onboarding, geofencing, and the regulatory framework, not just age, like you said. If you need to onboard on an institutional level and prove that you don't have, you know, whatever it is, you know, proof of funds, proof of source of wealth, whatever, it, like that's all possible.
Yeah, I mean, let's continue to dive into that a little bit more, because there are a lot of sectors and we've touched on a few, but like, what are some of those other sectors that you expect to adopt the blockchain technology and kind of use it in this way?
I mean, quite like from our perspective, it's the high risk verticals that kind of started all off always. They're always the ones that kind of move first. Gambling, gaming, adult, social media. That's really it to kind of start off.
And people don't realize how much activity and money are in those. When you look at number one, gambling, a ton of money, just a unfathomable amount of money. When you look at gaming, I mean, it's almost like half the world's population plays video games in some way. I mean, you're talking about just so many people across the entire planet. And it's the nice thing about that is, again, it's not like you're like, oh, well, this is only something that's popular in the US, or, oh, this is only something that's popular in Asia. It's like, no, it's like there are global use cases for a lot of these. And there's also so, so much money that's involved with it as well. And the growth rates are all there. I mean, especially for the gaming industry, that's one that I've kind of, you know, specialized in over here and looked at the metrics and looked at its compound annual growth rate and activity and stuff. And, it's one that I'm excited about. I know in recent years, there hasn't been the infrastructure to get gaming where it needs to be, but I think we're starting to get back to that point. And I think with what you all are doing at Concordium is helping us get to the point where we can have like anything that's like crypto integrated or blockchain integrated for the gaming side to get where it needs to be.
Correct. Like we have, I just had a meeting today with a gaming company. So in-game purchases, they wanna do this on Concordium simply because of the capabilities that we have, right? Building that in, and also like the age gating is quite big there, right? So for you to buy your pink battle ostrich in whatever game, you maybe shouldn't be 13 with daddy's credit card.
Yeah.
Right. So this is where all those things come kind of together. All the way down to, and if you kind of flip that on the side, so the use case of actually using money within certain mm-hmm. ecosystems, that's number one. But if I just look at the social media world right now, which is getting clamped down left, right, and center, under 13s, under 16s, whatever, there are huge fines that are being given out, right? In Australia, you have a violation around this, you pay 24 million Aussie dollars. One violation.
Wow.
So they're really people. It's so new that people haven't actually read up on this. But for example, adult content in the US is being restricted now in 18 states. But it's not only the users that are coming in. The next leg here is also where it's becoming important with regards to the adult, with regards to the content creators. You want to make sure from a regulatory perspective that they are over 18 too. So the entire payments flow can go back to back if you do it on Concordium.
And you know, going back to your
baked in, and this is important. There's not some layer two solution, and it's all like we can do now five times as much TPS. You know, five times as much TPS than Solana. Man, if we get to the point of like having to cross more than 2,000 TPS, right? That's great. Yeah. That use case, and not bot driven stuff in some DeFi pools, right? Yeah. I just want to make that clear. But it's like then you have the next problem, right? Think of Ethereum, right? Look at what happened on October 10th, right? Gas fees went through the roof.
Yep.
Now Concordium has it fiat pegged. Mm. It's fixed. Right now it costs 1 euro cent. A transaction costs 1 cent, always. It's a fork-free consensus, can't fall over. Like, if you actually dive deeper, specifically for like the hardcore crypto fans, I highly recommend that you should start reading our white paper, because this is majorly different than anything else that you know out there. Far more robust. Scalable.
I mean, and going back to your point about these fines and stuff, you have to ask the question from the company's perspective. How much is it worth it to avoid having those constant fees? Because we see it happen a lot where something happens, they have to pay a fine, they get in trouble. How much is it worth to remove 99% plus of that risk? And they're going to say, well, if this happens on an average of, you know, let's just say it's, I don't know what the number is. Say it happens once a day, right? Okay, that's $24 million a day. How much is it worth to you to reduce that by whatever, 99% or whatever? And they're going to say, well, it's probably worth us at least $23, $24 million because that's how much we're paying right now, right?
And this is exactly where we come in,
okay,
right? Because the way that we do it, it's not trying to, you know, pump money into a growing ecosystem on the premise of, you know, if you think of like yield farming, et cetera, where do you think those 40% come from?
Yeah.
Like people are so weird that they think like it's just like magic money that just appears. Yeah. Ultimately, what it comes down to is that we are turning into a, if you bring the users, it's worth something to the company, the integration of the, because this is open source, right? Go to GitHub, use it. Right? So they go like, how much is it? And we go, for free.
Yeah.
And they go like, great, what do we need to do? It's like, you have a subscription model? Maybe get yourself a couple of CCDs if you want to do sponsored transactions. Otherwise, the users, you cannot just guide them towards holding some CCD in order to do all the wonderful stuff that you want to do, right? But the beauty about this is also there are revenue shares, affiliate revenue shares. Those guys are fighting for users. So if you figure out of how to bring this Web2 world that currently, so they look at you as a crypto firm, right? But if you bring them users that currently in a compliant way can interact with their content, whatever it is, gaming, gambling, adult, social, like whatever, right? You suddenly find yourself in a position where you make money outside of transaction volume. And that's like, I'm at the end of the day, I'm a business guy, but I'm also a cypherpunk deep down. I want to see both work together. Right now, if you look at every single foundation out there, it's all just based on the premise of loads of transactions, use the gas, and ultimately, you know, sell some coin. We don't position ourselves that way. This is a revenue generating foundation, which is nuts.
Yeah.
If you think about it. So, yeah.
Yeah. No, you're right. It is nuts, man. And that's what fascinates me so much about this stuff, is that we get to see it grow. And I love doing the podcast because we get to see crypto grow. And every single year, we're getting closer and closer and closer. And we get to speak to people like yourself who are actually building this from the ground up, talking to businesses, talking with companies and regulators and like the actual countries themselves about making this stuff happen. And we get this like just this close up zoomed in view of what's going on. And I mean, you all have shipped a lot this year. What would you consider your biggest milestone so far?
I think, look, you have to kind of go to the point of like, I very much restructured the entire business, you know, there's a completely new management team that came on. And then we just went to work on the premise of like PLTs, like those protocol level issuance situation that didn't exist. So we built that. And then we just basically went out in order to start create an ecosystem around it. So we're very much focused in and around PSPs, like payment service providers that got like thousands of merchants behind them. And they see revenue drops right now because of the age gating mainly. And people like, you know, if you think of the adult content world, it's like there are three options, right? And you have to kind of ask yourself the question. So it kind of comes to product specifications as well. And what I mean there is, you know, number one is send your passport. No, thank you. Why do I want them to have my passport? Number two is like a, you know, selfie with AI age estimation, a bit weird while you, you know, hold your thing. And then second of all, or the third option is a button that says anonymous verification. Mm-hmm. Which one are you inclined to press? I know which one I'm pressing.
Yeah, probably the anonymous.
And
right?
There you have a user. Yeah. There you have a user. At this point, there is no now hook your ID app or the wallet up to this pool and start swapping whatever. That stuff's not mentioned, right? So we've done that. We have, so PSPs are very high up, and most of it was really just announced in Q4. Because the first three quarters were really just building. We were quite quiet around there. Yeah. And then, of course, the wallets. That was a big one as well. Like Bitcoin.com, Ledger, Saffle, Coin98, just to mention a few. Because that's also hundreds of millions of, like about 110 million users right there. Mm. Then you have, you know, we're thinking about things like more broader KYC, but in a privacy preserving way, meaning that you just do it once and then, you know, think of a world where you just rock up to Chase on the homepage, you scan a QR code and the accounts open in a second, right? Because of reliance of KYC, et cetera. Then you have, what else? Ecosystem, you know. Exchanges, yeah. and stuff like this kind of came to it, but it was all kind of only in Q4. The stuff that I'm really excited about is going to happen in like January, February, March, like Q1, yeah. And Q2 should be very big, the way that I see it right now in terms of just pure adoption on our side. Yeah. So yeah, that's just to mention a few things.
Yeah.
There is a plethora more. Just follow us on the socials. You'll see it all.
I guess if we flip the question on its head and say, hey, let's fast forward a year in advance, 12 months down the road, what do you hope that Concordium is known for?
Concordium is what my hope is.
Yeah.
Because you never know, right? I want to be known as the privacy preserving verification layer for the traditional world as well as the crypto world, because we can also, you know, have verification capabilities for other chains. Yeah. So you just build it into the transaction. As long as you have a Concordium ID, that address is verified. Yeah. Do you see what I mean?
Yep.
So I have no interest in order, coming back to the point, right? I'm no interest in order to piss into the pond of Ethereum or Solana. They should do what they want to do. Mm-hmm. But if the regulator says, hey, how about the verification on that front for whatever use case there is, you can do that. The other side, I think also, which is something that we just announced a couple of weeks ago, and I think we're going to be doing more and more of it. Well, I don't think I know, is what we've done with the XO2, X402 Foundation, mm-hmm. Like Coinbase's setup in and around agentic payments. So in an agentic economy where you've got like agents running around doing all sorts of things, you need to verify that they actually have been, you know, green lighted by ultimately a human. Yep. And we've built that already out. So that's out there. So you just need to look it out. But it's like ultimately Concordium should be there as the verification and smart money layer for real world applications.
Yeah. And the cool thing is that, I mean, privacy is on the rise. You look at it. It is on the rise right now. I know in recent years, there's been regulation and there's been fears. You know, is this stuff even going to be allowed? Let me tell you, things are looking bright for it. I mean, if you haven't seen, if you're you may be newer to crypto, you're not super into it, just look at the privacy sector lately and some of, like, if nothing else, if you're not going to look at adoption, if you're not going to look at regulation, if you're not going to read through any of that, I mean, just look at the price of some of these privacy related charts. It is nuts. Like Zcash, for example, they did like 2,000% in a couple months time. Like there's a lot of attention coming towards the space.
No, I mean, we've also done several hundred, and now with everything happened, you know, it all came back, rightly so. But it's like, also the important thing is, and I think there is something that needs to be mentioned on this, as much as I also like Zcash to a certain extent, but there is a difference between anonymity and privacy.
Yes.
There is a massive difference. There is a massive difference. And the difference is completely shielded transactions. Nobody knows anything. The regulator will never, which is also why you see like Zcash from certain times, like even Binance shut it down, right?
Yep.
The deposits. There is the fact, however, if you want to go down the list, if you want to look for somebody that is compliance ready, if you think about it, and I never thought of myself of talking a lot about compliance, trust me. Yeah. But it's like, if you want to have real world adoption, you need to strike that balance.
Yep.
And anybody out there right now, even though, you know, we're not that known yet, there is, if you dive deeper and you actually really unpack, if you look at, you know, CoinGecko in the privacy sector, we're like in the top five, right? Zcash is number one, and then you kind of go down the list, Seke, Zinc, et cetera, et cetera. But if it comes to the fact of the capabilities, if you boil it down, and it's also quite, I'm a fan of simplicity, identity on the base layer, protocol level issuance, abstracting away all the risks of smart contracts, the stuff that you can do with this, just like you said earlier, is endless. Yeah. Endless. You can build new DeFi, which I would love to call NewFi, right? Where you basically say it's not built on the fact of you having to send funds into a smart contract anymore. You keep them. It's a locking mechanism, right? There are so many things that you could do. But yeah, I completely agree with you. The privacy, and it's interesting how all the core things are coming back, right?
Yeah.
This zero knowledge proofs was the core idea about everything that this industry basically stands for. It just evolved so quickly that we need to try, you know, trade apes and punks and stuff. And then eventually kind of reverts back to the mean, just like any market.
Yeah.
You're either in balance or out of balance. I think that the privacy thing in terms of real world adoption, but not disregarding the compliance angle, is the only way that we can win. And then subsequently, we hopefully find ourselves in a Zcash way. But you still have to deal with bad actors. And that's, you know, if you think of like what we can do on geofencing side of things, yeah, transaction goes through. But Tether or Circle that is issuing on Concordium says it's not allowed to touch anything from North Korea, Korean wallet. Transaction would just not go through, right? So that's ultimately what it comes down to. It's just logical, simplistic ways of thinking about it. And yeah, tooling is the other side, right?
Absolutely. Well, Boris, really appreciate you coming on here. For all the listeners out there who want to get plugged in, they want to follow yourself and what Concordium's doing, where can they find you at?
Everywhere. You know, there are the Telegram groups. We're on X, of course, just at Concordium. You find us there. You have Discord, anything that you can possibly do, go to concordium.com. You find us there, and it gives you very detailed, also like the entire tech roadmap, like the full Monty. Follow us on the socials, because that's where we are. You know, we're banging out stuff daily now, so it would be great for you to follow us.
Absolutely. Well, once again, Boris, aka Triple B, thank you for coming on with us. We know the audience enjoyed this one. And that's going to wrap us up, everyone. So thank you all for tuning in to another awesome episode of the Crypto 101 podcast. And we'll see all of you on the next one at the same time, same place next week.
This isn't just a game, it's a once in a generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
All right, remember, the machine knows if you're lying. First statement, Carvana will give you a real offer on your car all online.
False.
True, actually. Oh. You can sell your car in minutes.
False? That's gotta be...
True again. Carvana will pick up your car from your door, or you can drop it off at one of their car vending machines.
Sounds too good to be true, so true.
Finally caught on. Nice job. Honesty isn't just their policy, it's their entire model. Sell your car today, too.
Carvana.
Pickup fees may apply.
If you're an HVAC technician and a call comes in, Grainger knows that you need a partner that helps you find the right product, fast and hassle-free. And you know that when the first problem of the day is a clanking blower motor, there's no need to break a sweat. With Grainger's easy-to-use website and product details, you're confident you'll soon have everything humming right along. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.